This is Mae Brussel. It's side two of broadcast number 761. I'm referring to an article called Biotechnology and the Transformation of Nature that was in the Texas Observer June the 13th, 1986. They described how in 1953 James Watson and Francis Crick discovered the structure of DNA, but it was in 1971 when Paul Berg of Stanford University split DNA into two different viruses and recombined their genetic material that became a new product. They split the DNA molecule, recombined genetic material. This became known as genetic engineering, and in 1971, the scientists also discovered the potential hazard of the research of Dr. Berg at Stanford University because he planned to insert the virus that caused tumors into animals, into what they called E. coli, C-O-L-I, a bacteria common to people. And another scientist, Robert Pollock, pointed out that if it were to escape from the laboratory, it could infect people, and the risk seemed enormous. By 1973, genetic manipulation became possible when two scientists found a way to transfer the genes into DNA of a bacteria. They would put a bacteria that would multiply in each of the million offspring possessing and reproducing the first foreign genetic characteristic. And by 1974, the country's biologists, according to this article, were getting together, and for 4 years they debated, how do you regulate genetic engineering? What do you do to control it? And involved in this discussion was the National Institute of Health, and they tried to establish some guidelines, but they evidently aren't too successful because these things are now being tested, and were in Texas for 2 years, and nobody was notified about gene-altered bacteria being used in Texas. And, of course, advanced genetic sciences is referred to just generally in this article about a company that wanted permits but ran into problems because it was involved in testing bacteria on trees before they could get a permit, but it doesn't identify the company. Now, under the title Gene Designers, it describes companies such as Lubrizol, Monsanto, Dow Chemical, Chevron, and W.R. Grace as being very anxious to get into the field of biotechnology. And, of course, W.R. Grace is J. Peter Grace. That's his company. And he personally brought over Otto Ambrose, the designer of Zyklon B, the extermination gas for Adolf Hitler. Ambrose came to the United States under the Project Paperclip, the scientist's passport, to work in the United States, so that I.G. Farben's top scientist, top dog, was brought to this country. And W.R. Grace and Company, under J. Peter Grace, he's under that, that's his family company, is the fifth largest chemical company trying to study the biology, the genetically altered technology that they just recently got a permission to use on tobacco plants. And I'll do more of that in a moment. There's a book out called Altered Harvest, The Agriculture, Genetics, and the Fate of the World's Food Supply by Jack Doyle, Viking Press, Viking Penguin, 1985. And a book review is titled Gene Splicing on the Farm. And it's about altered harvest, suggesting, according to what I've read about the book, that it's contrary to what the government is telling us on biotechnology, that it will produce agriculture that will help us and grow food and be practical and sustainable in a democratic fashion. And Doyle writes about the fact that it is a possible economic and scientific disaster, that it gives growing monopoly power to a handful of people, like the 5 or 10 top seed companies, that the Fortune 500 people will be able to buy the biotechnology. It won't be sold to ordinary farmers, and it will be used at the expense of farmers and consumers. And genetic engineering of plant and livestock will strengthen the food companies already existing and put the other ones out of business, that will have super farms. And he cites in the 1930s we had 6.8 million farms. And even though the population has grown, we've reduced our farms to 2.2 million. And companies like Monsanto, he quotes that one, ensure that a new crop varieties that require these herbicides and these toxins and so forth will increase their profits. But the ecological implications are ominous. And he talks about the problems of genetic altering, the effect it had on a corn crop. They tried it. 1970-71, the southern corn blight, and it destroyed 15% of the nation's corn. and that there's poisons and concentrations that were in it, and that there can be accidents, and that it will affect the ecology and close the farms and only make the advance or the advantages of these experiments useful to the major farm suppliers, the multi-mega farms, and push the small farmer out of business. He won't be able to compete. And just as they can put altered strains into hogs, and they're testing it with cows now, they can get a cow to make 20% more milk than it did before. They can close a lot of the farms and use a few cows and let them be the workhorses for the milk and shrink the farms. So this is a book called Altered Harvest about those problems. Now, along the lines of genetic engineering, the World Almanac, I was just having to look it up for other purposes, and 1971 Almanac had a review of medical developments during 1970. And under the subject of genetics, they jumped right to genetics because they said there were few notable advances in medicine in 1970. In the 1970s, yet in Stanford, Dr. Berg was working on this DNA, which was a major breakthrough, but they didn't recognize that. But then they went into genetics, and they talked about the future manipulation of genes responsible for inherited diseases and the manipulation of human genes, which is a distant goal. But they said Dr. James German, German is a good last name, reported that one in every 700 live-born males has a chromosome complement that is associated with increased frequency of impulsive and antisocial behavior, and that they could improve methods of screening the genetic makeup of unborn babies to get rid of antisocial behavior of particular males, which is interesting. Maybe we'll get rid of the Rombos finally. Who knows? But that in testing these things, the Almanac goes on to talk about the moral and ethical implications of the techniques, but that you can choose the behavior of people through DNA virus. And investigators, they cited their work on the employment of enzyme messages into families suffering from various diseases and so forth. But besides diseases, they said the possible sociological implications of genetic engineering already concern many biologists as an additional hazard of the brave new world. So when Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew took over a point of Fort Detrick, Maryland, to work on cancer with the National Cancer Institute and start working into these fields of the DNA and cancer, they already knew that there were intentions to use genetic experiments along the lines of wiping out people whose behavior you didn't like so the next generation wouldn't have it, that you could tell the seeds of behavior in the genes, and that was a part of the genetic experiment. So population control and genetics is wedded to each other and not separate, and it has a lot of possibilities that could be very dangerous. Now, in outlining a chart of advanced genetic sciences and the combination of Mr. Beauregard working, Lawrence Beauregard working with the new science director, Ronald Reagan science director, William Graham of NASA, whose programs the president said would make medical science up with the space shuttles and so forth. I was going through some articles about various persons whose careers and experiences overlap each other, and I believe it's more than coincidence that their names appear and reappear in agencies that work with each other whose goals seem to be similar to Reinhard Gehlen, who at the end of the war wanted to get rid of 30 million people and make 40 million slave horses, Hitler's chief of intelligence of the East, and the people who brought him to this country. Now, Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, the brothers, were very instrumental in a lot of the setting the groundwork for experimentation, for working with the offices of IG Farben, for coups that took place ever since World War II, State Department policy, mind control, medical experiment, and that kind of activity, manipulating human beings for other than the purposes for which they were originally put on planet Earth. And Alan Dulles was instrumental with the CIA in the overthrow of Guatemala, the coup where Mr. Arbenz was moved out. That was 1954. They were working for United Fruit Company, the intelligence community, and very many of the people involved in the current events today are linked to that event, the overthrow of Guatemala. That was 1954. Helping Mr. Dulles was E. Howard Hunt of the CIA, formerly the OSS, who was one of the big figures between the MK-Ultra and the mind control program and the chemical and biological warfare against people in the United States. Now, I read a book, many of you have it, it's called Endless Enemies by Jonathan Quitney. And in that book, making the chapter Making Our Bed in Central America, he describes Foster Dulles, John Foster Dulles, Assistant Secretary of State of Latin Affairs, John Moores Cabot, who helped him launch the attack against Mr. R. Benz, openly putting the communist game there, accusing him of being a communist instead of making social reforms in Guatemala. Cabot's brother, Thomas Cabot, was a recent president of the United Brands. I call it United Fruit, it's United Brands, and the Cabot family still held stock in the company. United States Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge fended off Guatemala's efforts to get UN protection. And, of course, Henry Cabot Lodge ran as vice president with Richard Nixon. They both lost when John Kennedy won the election in 1960, but they were very important with United Brands. Now, the reason I bring it up is that they refer to Thomas Cabot and John Moores Cabot, the Secretary of State, Assistant Secretary of State for Latin American Affairs, because when you read the biography of Lawrence Bogorod of Advanced Genetic Sciences, he got a Maria Moores Cabot professorship for biology from 1980 to the present time. He works at Harvard University, he's head of the biology department, and he has this new appointment, the head of the National Science Organization that will be working with Mr. William Graham of NASA. So he is part of the Maria Moores Cabot Foundation, a professor, and the Who's Who directory described his work there from 1974 to 1976. And then 1980, went back to Harvard, Henry Cabot Lodge Foundation, the Maria Moores Cabot, were part of Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles's co-workers in effecting coups in Central America and other places. Now, Alan Dulles's law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell was the office that represented I.G. Farben for the extermination gases. I think of them in genocide. They did a lot of other things, chemicals and dyes and so forth, but most notably the genocide mentality. And Mr. Adams, a director of Advanced Genetic Sciences, came from the office of Sullivan and Cromwell, the Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles' office, and moved to Oakland to set up the Office of Advanced Genetic Sciences in 1979. And Dulles, as I say, brought in the expert on Zyklon B. He also brought in from the I.G. Farben, Hoffmann LaRouche Labs in Bern, Switzerland, or in Switzerland, made LSD, and he brought approximately, some accounts say 1 and some 3 million capsules of LSD to affect the minds of the population in this country. So our CIA director and the Dulles brothers worked not only with the exterminators, I.G. Farben, but they have a past record with medical experiments and mind experiments on native population. Now, the Torbett document that describes the people behind the murder of John Kennedy goes into Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger and specific agents of NASA working for a coup in the United States, which killed the President of the United States, and affected by CIA director removed by John Kennedy, Alan Dulles, because Kennedy didn't trust him after the Bay of Pigs. And then Alan Dulles was put on the Warren Commission to get rid of all the smell or hint of any possible conspiracy, so that the two Dulles brothers worked closely with and covered up any possibility of the connections of Walter Dornberger or Wernher von Braun. And they also have worked closely with Project Paperclip and the scientists who came over here that were located in Huntsville, Alabama, that being the place that decided and made the official literal demand that they launch out of Marshall Space Center and overriding Morton Thiokol's people in Utah. And William Graham, as acting director of NASA, went ahead with that, having written the president's speech of Christa McAuliffe, they were going to launch. But the Dulles brothers have a history of espionage, of literal genocide with the chemicals and biological warfare that they planned and set the network with E. Howard Hunt and Richard Helms and our CIA, which has had the same people operational ever since the discovery of these chemicals to affect our mind and body. Many of them are still active in the CIA and in the Defense Department and National Security Agency. Also, Lawrence Bogarde, who works with William Graham, Bill Graham, the new science director, was also part of the atomic energy. He had worked with atomic energy, molecular genetics, and plant and food, and he also worked with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and then he worked with food and botany. So he has a wide range of activities on his brochure that, where they describe him as working with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Joint Council on Food and Agriculture and Science. So nuclear and food aren't separated from the Maria Moores Cabot Foundation, from the Allen John Foster Dulles Law Offices, from Sullivan and Cromwell, and the very scientists who put together AGS have a history related to both the space and the coups that took place in this country ever since World War II. Now, there's other articles that indicate the dangers that we're going into. One is May the 11th, 1986. Tests can show damage to immune system. And as I said before, the AGS people, Advanced Genetic Sciences, said that releasing this bacteria, this live genetically altered bacteria, could affect people with weak immune systems. But this article is about Dr. Robert Smith of the Biomedical Division of Lawrence Livermore Lab, who works for a commercial venture called Enzyme System Products that works in Japan and in San Francisco, San Francisco State. They're working on AIDS virus, and I think it's very interesting that Lawrence Livermore Lab, a commercial laboratory in Livermore, associated also with the Defense Department, is getting a finger in the AIDS. I don't know how much they participate in share work, but Dr. Smith is the biological division of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, and of course, this is Edward Teller, the Star Wars, the father of the hydrogen bomb, the laser weapons, the star lasers that will burn and scorch the Earth. At the same time that they're working with that mentality of destroying the Earth, they're also working on AIDS and enzyme systems and into biomedicine and chemistry, which is really a interesting and fearful crossover. Another article, May the 11th, hospital blames Army reservist illness on pesticide. And it tells about various Army reservists that were taken to a hospital. They were dizzy at Camp Parks near Pleasant in California. They suffered from acute pesticide poisoning. 19 of them were taken to hospitals. And there had been pesticide spraying early in the park, and they became ill. They were outdoors and were taken to hospitals. But it was serious enough for them to be sick. But these things were sprayed in our forests, and there's been warnings about the national parks and the danger of pesticides affecting you in these parks, and they've been sprayed there, so that there's a certain element of society that goes camping under the park trees and eats the soybeans, and I see myself, I can identify with things that I like or enjoy as getting contaminated and being dangerous for recreational purposes or for healthy, good nutrition, such as soybeans. Recent article, April 25th, 1986, the CDC, that's the health center down for disease control down in Atlanta, Georgia, that I don't trust. The CDC is concerned about the inability to detect pesticide in your foods. So you have no immunity or no way to detect what you're getting, and they can't measure it for you. And this article says that last summer's outbreak of watermelon-related food poisoning has scientists concerned that current lab techniques may not be able to pinpoint the amount of pesticides that can cause illness. At least 1,175 probable cases of food poisoning related to melons contaminated had the pesticide aldecarb sulfoxide. They were reported in California, in 8 other states, and 2 Canadian provinces. The National Center for Disease Control said that this insecticide, commonly used on crops, potatoes, and citrus fruit, is not approved for use on melons, and the symptoms are rapid illness, seizure, loss of consciousness. There were 6 deaths last year. But what the article goes on to say is that it leaves no traces of aldecarb in your system. So in many instances, the poisoning is taking place, but there's no trace. And the article says it is possible that the laboratory analyses are too sensitive to detect the poison at levels that can cause human illness. The suspicion has implications for monitoring pesticide residue in food, but some of the concern was that the method for testing food, ASO, aldecarb sulfodioxide, is not very sensitive. So you can be camping under the parks or eating your soybean, or in this case, getting this pesticide aldecarb, and it doesn't show up in any tests, but you're getting it through your food. And too much of this is happening, and it's synchronized also with the intent of these people talking about too much population and bringing out the problem of there's too many people, and also we want to alter their behavior genetically. And now they have the means to put things into substances, anything you eat. Potatoes is another staple of the poor, as well as corn that's being sprayed in soybeans, and you can put it into the potatoes. Now, I just briefly mentioned a confusion I had on my part about Jeremy Rifkin, who seems to do a tremendous job of stopping these major corporations from the live bacteria they're spreading. But on the other hand, there's some contradictions about Jeremy Rifkin. My first impression, I've only talked to him twice, but once when I mentioned the use of these multinational corporations and their involvement, like Roman Haas and IG Farben and Standard Oil and so forth, putting money into AGS, he acted so strange as if he never heard about what I was talking. And yet, from reading more since that time, I know that he's a very knowledgeable person. Now, there's an article in the Peninsula Palo Alto Tribune, June the 1st, a listener to World Watchers sent to me, Innovative Seedlings Taking Root. And this goes into Jeremy Rifkin giving permission to J. Peter Grace, W.R. Grace Company, to go ahead and use genetically engineered seedings in one crop, but stopping it in others. The article says that 200 genetically engineered tobacco seedlings were planted in a test for the first time. Robert Fields, the president of Middleton-based company called AgriCetus, said it's designed to provide information on yield and vigor of genetically altered plants. Tobacco seedlings were planted. AgriCetus is a joint venture of W.R. Grace & Company and the Cetus Corporation, and they are testing genetically altered plants. And W.R. Grace, again, are the people that brought in Otto Ambrose from IG Farben. Now, an editorial in Wall Street Journal called Czar Rifkin asked the question about Jeremy Rifkin allowing a field test of genetically altered tobacco seedlings that would be taking place in Middleton, Wisconsin, as well as in California. Rifkin said, "We looked into it at the time, and it didn't raise the kind of fundamental questions the other tests did." Mr. Rifkin said that in general, genetically modified plants pose less risk than microorganisms because they can be contained more easily. So they were questioning why he stops some of these organisms from being tested, but he gave a go-ahead for the tobacco tests that belong to, these are the J. Peter Grace tobacco seedlings, testing genetically altered material. And I also pointed out the confusion I had seeing a picture of Pat Robertson and an article that he had on his guest that he was promoting Jeremy Rifkin and his theories of agriculture and so forth, and he cited his books Entropy and the Emerging Order, God in an Age of Scarcity. I just bought that book last week, and it's praising the religious fundamentalists, the evangelicals, and the presence of him two times on the program with Pat Robertson is interesting. As I say, I cited it before, because Pat Robertson was a roommate of J. Peter Grace, and Grace was a big sponsor. Grace, the head of the Knights of Malta in this country, was a sponsor of the Christian Broadcasting with Pat Robertson, who is well known throughout the world for his religious activities and his huge corporation, religious corporation. And Jeremy Rifkin was called upon in the Wall Street Journal, "Why are you letting them, this company, the Grace Company, the tobacco, do the genetic alterations and not the others?" And Grace is very closely affiliated with Pat Robertson, and Rifkin was the guest twice, at least twice, of Pat Robertson. The San Francisco Chronicle financial section had an article, June 28, 1986, "Loosening Rules on Genetic Products." And it says, it tells about 20 Wisconsin cows that are part of a biotechnology debate. Using a genetically engineered version of a natural growth hormone, they can increase the milk 10 to 40%. Then it goes on, it says, industry interests were further advanced last week with the publication of a long-awaited Reagan administration formula for regulating biotechnology products. Our perception is that they provide a definitive roadmap to get from the laboratory to the marketplace, said Richard Godown, executive director of a company called Biotechnology Association. And then the article goes on to say that there was a 2-year delay in field experiments with genetically modified tobacco plant. The plant was produced by Agricetus, a joint venture of Emeryville-based Cetus and W.R. Grace. And then they went ahead and got permission, and they loosened the rules. The President of the United States loosened the rules for that company, and it lets the door open for a lot of other companies, to begin the experiments, and the consequences of which we have no way of knowing, and how far these things will spread in our air and in our environment. So that the playing with our health factor is a dangerous thing, but the question, of course, is why is it allowed some areas and not in others? Now, there are just a few quick things I want to go into before the hour is up. There was an interview this past week with Mr. Vyacheslav Molotov. Many of you remember him during World War II. The Soviet press published its first story in an entire generation Wednesday about Mr. Molotov. He was the right hand of Stalin. He was sent into political exile 30 years ago. He's now 96 years old, and he's on a pension, and he talks about he's happy to reach this age. He wants to reach 100. He was known as Iron Pants during his service in the war, and this article is about his reemergence and the interest in him. He attended a major international conference after World War II and then went into hiding, and he hasn't been seen for a long, long time. He was expelled from the Communist Party. And April of 1964, readmitted in 1984, no announcement was made. And now he's giving interviews with reporters. He gets up at 6:30. He takes 20 minutes of exercise. He strolls for an hour in the forest. He reads newspapers. After an hour of arrest, he spends 6 hours with his books. Now, the major argument that I receive when I talk about the possibility that Adolf Hitler is alive is he's too old, and if he's too old, he can't make decisions. He has to be senile, and I have said there's no physical evidence of any kind, and this has been written up in many books about the fact that Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun did not die in the bunker, and there's a possibility that Hitler has been directing a lot of the activity that's been going on ever since World War II, from Antarctica, from Argentina, and then Brazil, and then into Switzerland, where he can have his mind, he can have protectors, and where people know that Hitler is alive. The people that want to tell you that Hitler is dead have nothing to fall back on except the reasoning that even if he were alive, he could do no harm. And you see Mr. Molotov, who has a good mind, who can speak, who talks about his activities, his desires, and this throws aside any possibility that all 96-year-olds have to be senile and don't know what is happening. This, they say that Molotov is alive, therefore Hitler is alive, is ridiculous. But there is a very good possibility that using the Eagle ships sailing down the Hudson River is for a reason, and that the symbolism is there, and that in conjunction with top people in our Defense Department, such as the late Otto Skorzeny or Klaus Barbie, or the mysterious Fritz Kramer with the monocle, and then Peter Drucker, and the management of our money in our multinational empire, there is no way of knowing if the genius of that man isn't still around, because all the essence of things that he did, such as the Nuremberg rallies, were tied up in the Statue of Liberty celebrations. You couldn't miss the point. If Hitler was alive, he would have loved it. And the use of the deceased, such as Nelson Rockefeller using his home, naming the ship John Kennedy, the battleship after Kennedy was killed, this administration or the past ones don't care what they call the ship as long as the person is dead. And so the consideration of Molotov being away so many years and then surfacing and exercising and reading books and having his knowledge, and we know many old people do have these same facilities. It's ridiculous to think they don't. I have every reason to believe that things have gone too smoothly for everyone around Adolf Hitler, and the symbols, as I say, were kept alive, and it's very important to know that, because there hasn't been a break into what he had or did with his top intelligence chief, Reinhard Gehlen, coming to the United States, and so forth. Well, time is up now. I'll do more next week and get into the laboratories and the use of science that could be the cause of our undoing. No more ovens at Auschwitz, just the medical facilities to get rid of the population you don't want around. This is Mae Brussel. The program is World Watchers. Again, I thank you for all the articles and books you keep sending to me. And you keep cutting your newspapers and reading them, and I'll be back with you next week.